Good morning. You could say that that's our whole project here, to realize Tathagata's true meaning. And I would say that that's, Tathagata is the, what is the it that we're here all about? What is the suchness? What is the isness of our lives? And I would say that through time, through the history of Zen, that's been the question. And as many of you know, we've spent the last 90 days, we just ended our Ango on Sunday with that lovely celebration, spent the last 90 days studying women Zen teachers whose names and stories really hadn't been told before. And we used the recent book, The Hidden Lamp, which had a lot of stories of the Zen teachers, women Zen teachers, and women Buddhist teachers in general, too, a lot of the early ones in India. And I pointed out last time I spoke, I think it was last week or week before, that actually we have a lot of stories, but they weren't translated into Japanese and Korean. They're Chinese discourse records, and there were a lot of Chinese women who were Zen masters, renowned in China, and they had histories, discourse records, yulu, and they exist now, and they can be translated, and they are now being translated into English. But usually, in our Zen line, we usually just take, you know, what the things that have been translated from the Chinese into the Japanese and into the English. But now there's more scholars are doing some very good work out there examining some of these. And so today I want to talk about another woman that is in the Hidden Lamp, but there's more stories about her, and I thought that I would just kind of delve into her background. Her name is Jingyang, Kuiyuan Jingyang, a master in the Rinzai line. And I'm taking my material from, again, a book I mentioned last week. Beata Grant is a professor of Washington University, and she's published a book called Eminent Nuns, Women Chan Masters of the 17th Century. It's kind of very narrow and academic, and you know I love that, so I couldn't resist talking about her today. Last time I talked about Ziyong, who's also a 17th century Zen master. And she was born in the middle of the 17th century and lived till the end. This woman I want to talk about today, Jiyuan Kuenyan, was born at the very beginning of the 17th century. Actually, she was born in 1597, so just before the turn of the century. And those times, Irene needs to see the interpreter. Would she like to move up here?
Thank you.
No, Bokushu, this is better for eye contact with the interpreter. Yeah. I was talking about... what was I talking about? This is the aged mind. If you want to see an example of the aged mind, here it is. Okay, yes, the Ming China, dynasty China. This was a hugely hostile, difficult century in China because the Manchus moved down and took over. And so there was fighting going on for like the 100 years in China. So that was during the time of these two women. The one I talked about last week, Ziyong, was up in Beijing around the Forbidden City, but Jingyuan was down more around the Shanghai area, a little bit inland, but in that general area. And she was born to a very devout, scholarly couple, Hu Ria and Madame Dao. Her father was a Taoist scholar, and she was an only child. And it appears that actually she wasn't the daughter of his wife, but of his concubine. But his wife also mothered her, so she's kind of like had two mothers. They lived in the household together, and she was mothered by these two women, and she was very well educated. There's a newsletter that has been found around that time that listed her as one of the talented young women of the area. And she was known for her poetry. And eventually she was given the Dharma name Jiyang, but originally her name was Ms. Hun. And it's said that even from as a young child, she liked to sit by the family altar and chant the Buddha's name. And that she announced when she was 9 that she was not going to marry, that she wanted to dedicate herself to spiritual practice. But think of the times. It wasn't possible. Social pressure, pressure on the parents. They demanded that she marry. And she was soon engaged in a contractual relationship with a young man. But he died. He died before they had the formal wedding. But it didn't matter. According to custom, she now belonged to the in-laws. And she had to go and live with the in-laws and be like one of the people, even though they were kind of more scholarly class, she was like working for the in-laws, taking care of them and being in their family. And yet she really wanted to devote herself to spiritual practice. So she began to fast, and they didn't approve of that fasting, I guess, because it made her weak. And there was a difficult time until she completely refused to eat at all. And the family relented and said, okay, you can go and meet with some of these Zen teachers, but you still have to live here with us and support this family. By the work that you do. So this is the way it was in Ming Qing Dynasty China at that time. So she was able to go meet with an old Buddhist teacher by the name of Shi Ying. And we don't know if Master Shi Ying was a man or a woman. And there's no indication of that. So we have no idea. Most of the people we know in her story, but Shi Ying, it's unknown. And so she studied for quite some time, 10 years or so, with Shi Ying, 7 years. And then her father died. And she said that she wanted to go visit the famous master, Min Yuan. So she went to this really well-known male master. So she's about 27 now, 28. And she finally has a Dharma name that Master Shi Ying gave her. And now she's going to visit the most well-known teacher in southern China. So you imagine the energy of that. You're going to see this master, and you can imagine that there's a room full of people, mainly men. And she's gone to see him. And during the interview time with the whole group, she stands up and she says, "Where is the place that I can settle myself and establish my life? Where is the place that I can settle myself and establish my life?" So that apparently is a kind of familiar saying at the time, and it kind of indicates is like, how can I establish myself so that no matter what happens to me, no matter what the external pressures on me, I can be at one with my life. You know, she was bound by the conventions of her time, forced to live with people that she didn't feel were her family, and not pursue what she wanted to do, which was to study Zen, to meditate. She had very little control. And there was turmoil going on in the land at that time. So she was at the mercy of her parents, of her in-laws, of the customs of the times, and all the warring things that were going on. Where is the place I can settle myself and establish my life? I think I've asked myself that question many times. I still do. Where is the place? Where is the place? I'm talking about a physical place. Where is the place? Where is the state of mind that I can establish myself? Where can I settle? How can I stop hiding? How can I stop grasping? Trying to arrange things so I can solve myself and actually just be myself. Settle into who I am and how I am, no matter what the circumstances are. Sometimes we're going along fine and we hit a depression. We get depressed. How can we settle ourselves in our depression? We can do it. I've done it. We go along and we become ill. How to settle ourselves when we're ill? When we lose something we care about, a job, a person, a relationship, how to settle yourself? You know, it's a wonderful question. I think all of us here have had some kind of intuition about that, and that's what we're doing sitting on these cushions. Huh? The answer is not out there. So how can I establish my life? And my question would be, you know, what do you call your life? What are you calling your life? How can I settle myself? How to position, to anchor my life? And I would say, what are you waiting for? Can happen right now. You don't have to wait till you get home. You can do it right now. But I don't want to be, you know, superficial about this. Of course, we need to put ourselves in a position so that we can manage the ebb and flow of our lives with compassion, equanimity. Oh, this didn't go the way I wanted it to go. So this guy, this teacher, this famous teacher, he answers her in a typical Zen way, which, you know, I'm not particularly happy with, but this is what happened. He said, I believe you've come a long way, so I'll spare you the 30 blows. So we've talked about the 30 blows before, you know, it's a trope. It's really about, you know, getting the student to recognize that this is it. Oh, it's right here. The answer's not on the altar. It's not down the street. It's not in the teacher. That's what the hitting is about in Zen. But, you know, we, at this period in history and in our geography and where we are, you know, we Zen teachers now don't hit people, God forbid. But we try to touch them with our words, try to reach out. But in the old days, they used to, you know, at least that's what the words say. So I'll spare you, I'm not going to give you the 30 blows of Zen. But that's what that thing is about the 30 blows. It's about when somebody is stuck between the horns of a dilemma, you know. And they can't see that the question is really about them and their own life. That you can't get that answer from someone else. The difference between the idea of your life and your life. The difference between where is the place and here is the place. So then I'm talking about that a lot because it's the core of her following experience in Zen. She has several more koans I'll tell you about, but it's always about this question of where is the place. So then she went back home after this experience where he said, I'm not going to hit you. I spare you the 30 blows of Zen. So he's also saying, you deserve it, right? So she goes home to complete the mourning period, 7-year mourning period for her father. And then her mother dies. But what happens is she then inherits some land, and she uses that inheritance to trade with her in-laws her freedom. So they let her go. They free her. She gives them the land that she inherited from her mother's death. And rather than ordaining, she had never said she wanted to ordain. She had said she wanted to follow the path. And so rather than ordaining, she builds a little hut near the burial grounds of her parents. And she says she just wants to retreat there and practice Zen. And she says, this is from her Yulu, she says, I am resolved to spend the rest of my days behind closed doors nourishing my not knowing. Nourishing my not knowing. Huh? So she wants to go deep into her experience of what can't be spoken of, can't be seen, the ultimate truth, the Tathagata's teaching. So after she's there in this retreat house for a year by herself, meditating long hours, not eating much, she returned to that great teacher Yuan Mo's place, and she asked him, when the mind becomes like the shining sun, what then? So she's been sitting for a year, and now she comes back, you know, here, I'm pretty clear now, my mind is like a shining sun, what then? So he says, oh, have you already experienced enlightenment? And she says, no. He hit her. This time he hits her. Why did he hit her? Last time he spared her 30 blows. This time he hits her. Again. It's you. What's enlightenment? Let's be authentic here, he's saying. Let's be authentic. She didn't respond to that. So she left And she went to another teacher. She said, I can't deal with this. I like her a lot. For some of us, it takes a little time, you know. So Aragon, she goes to another teacher, old Master Aragon, who apparently was quite old. And he told her to study, if the 10,000 dharmas return to the one, what does the one return to? Okay, listen to that. If the 10,000 dharmas, like everything in this room, returns to the one, what does the one return to? So consider now her first question, where is the place that I can establish myself and settle myself? Where can I settle myself and establish my life? And then Yuan Wu asked her, have you experienced enlightenment? And now there's this question, if the 10,000 dharmas return to the one, what does the one return to? So how different are those three questions? Who are you right now? Where can you settle? So she worked on that question another time for a full year and went to yet another teacher. She went back to Master Aragon, who sent her to see Master Tongxing, who eventually is her dharma, the one that gave her dharma succession. So Master Tongshan says, what you should be working on is, what is your original face before your mother and father were born? Now, aren't those all asking the same question? Where is the place? What do they return to? What is your original face? We're always caught on that, aren't we? That question, there's the answer over there. Because of the holiday season, I'm aware that this dilemma is not just, you know, in Zen. We can't see what's right before us. And, you know, Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? He couldn't see his Buddha nature. And Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass me by. He didn't think he was worthy of the sacrifice. And Muhammad runs down the hill into his wife's apron, sits in her lap, and cries because of his terror of being addressed by God. So it's not just me or you, but it is the human condition to not recognize our Buddha nature. So in the Genjo Koan, you remember Dogen says, do not practice thinking that the realization must become the object of one's knowledge and vision, that it must be grasped conceptually. Even though the attainment is manifest, its intimate nature is not necessarily realized. Some may realize it, some may not. I see this in long retreats so often. People come in and their face is shining. They have a glow all over, and yet there's a doubt. They don't see that they're already in the experience of the vast interconnectedness of life. But their minds are still caught in this, how can I do better? How can I get enlightened? When actual fact, it's right there in the way they hold a cup, in the way they bow. So Xingxiang's new teacher, Dongchang, said after she came a couple of times and he didn't like her presentation, he told her, don't come back until you can show me. So she then became afraid of going to see him. But one day he was giving a talk, and her former master, Zhijing, whom I like to think of as an old woman, went to visit the new guy. So the new guy was going to give a talk, and so she decided to go and listen to the talk. Before the talk began, Tongshan asked Zhijing, the old woman, Zen master, what are you working on these days? And Master Zhijing said, who? Like, who? And when Xingxiang heard that, she jumped up and she shouted, asking who and answering who, getting dressed and eating. One does as one pleases. Asking who and answering who. Asking and answering. Getting dressed and eating. One does as one pleases. It's like in one blow, she penetrates all of those questions she had, all at one time. Where is the place I can settle myself? Asking who, getting dressed and eating, one does as one pleases. Huh? When the mind becomes like the shining sun, what then? Getting dressed and eating, one does as one pleases. If the 10,000 dharmas return to the one, what does the one return to? Getting dressed and eating, and does as one pleases. What was your original face before your mother and father were born? Asking who and answering who. Getting dressed and eating. One does as one pleases. What triggered her? It was like the wind blowing in the trees. A phrase that was not aimed at her. But with a wide open mind, she heard, who? Who? And she answered all of her life's questions right there. So that's a lesson for all of us, you know. So I love these koans. There's quite a few. There are five or six, actually, that have the person next to the person, not the teacher who gives the final enlightening word, but it's someone else. But if you're here, if you're awake, if you're alive, if you're totally in to your question, you'll hear it. You'll hear it. It may be someone on the bus says something to you. It may be something you hear on the subway. It doesn't have to come from the mouth of a Zen teacher. It only has to be heard from the heart of an awakened person. An awakening person, let me say, because we're always awakening over and over again. We do fall asleep. So after a few more years of practice, she received Dharma transmission, and she began to take on students. She became abbess of a monastery, and she was known for her great generosity and discipline. In her line, she stressed meditation and koan practice. And she had many Dharma heirs, many of them lay. You see, she had a long lay life. She was into her mid-30s before she entered a monastery. So she had a long lay life and really recognized the importance of insight for lay people. And a lot of men successors. So after her transmission, they make a portrait of the person, and she wrote under her portrait, Kiyuan knows nothing of Zen. When hungry, she eats. When tired, she sleeps. When people come to ask her about the way, she has nothing to say. Thrusting forth her hand and clenching her fists, the marvelous mystery is complete. So simple. I don't know why we make it so complicated. We look for a new teacher, a new practice, a new app. Call it meditation, call it zazen. Dogen says, when one first seeks the Dharma, one is far away from its environs. When one has already correctly transmitted the Dharma to oneself, one is one original self at that moment. When we first start to practice, oh yes, I want that enlightenment number 32. The one where she sees that everything is hers and she is everything. Well, maybe not. Maybe you want the one for you. For you. When you first seek the Dharma, one is far, you think it is far away from you. And then he says, Dogen, when one has already correctly transmitted the Dharma to oneself, one is one original self at that moment. That's how you establish yourself. That's how you find the place. Where is the place? Asking who and answering who. Getting dressed and eating. One does as one pleases. We look for some big mansion on the hill. We don't recognize that we're living right in our home. So I hope you enjoyed the story of Zhiyong. I like her. There's more. There's two more chapters of her. I may talk about her at a further time. She became very well known. She's kind of a rock star eventually in Qing Dynasty China. But she was very ethical, very sincere. And it took her so long. And for that, I love her. She persisted all that time, getting engaged, living with the in-laws, burying her parents, living alone in a hut, and keep going to these Zen teachers who seemed, she felt, rejecting her because she could not stop rejecting herself. And then she saw it in a very indirect way. How marvelous. So let me end with a gatha to inspire you. The magic city on the hill, grasping it, I miss it. Breathing in, I remember. Breathing out, this spring, my life, right now, the bells are ringing, this is the place.